So this is Fit as a Fiddle Plus, and we come to you every month in a podcast format so that we can share health and wellness tips and tricks. And so I just want to tell you a little bit about what we do. I have the Kathy Benner International Academy, and once we interview our guest or talk about our hot topics, I do upload those into the academy, and they're free for anybody that wants to go and listen to the replays. And it's in a teachable platform. So it does ask you to register for a teachable account, which is just an email and a password if you want one. And you can click through any of the free replays in there. We have everything from real estate to writers to health and wellness to networking. It's all there, everything that I teach. And we'd like to invite you to actually join the Academy. It's $25 a month to get all the courses and all the details and all the good stuff. But you can listen to any of the free stuff for free that's in there. So Rita just tapped in. She's trying to change her name. You know why? Because I haven't made you a co-host yet. Let me do that. I'm making her a co-host. Now she'll have all the privileges that I have. So that way she can do whatever she wants there. Anyway, join the academy, or if not, at least listen in to all of the free replays. It's great information. So we're happy that you are here. And I want to do a little segue over to Rita. I want her to tell you what it is that she does with the podcast today. And then, Rita, tell us how you know Harry. But, Rita, over to you.
Absolutely. So, hey everybody, and so glad to have Harry here. I'm Rita Brewer. I've been a clinically practicing physician assistant for 33 years, but really over the past 12 years, I developed a real passion for preventative health and wellness. After working in surgery for many years and seeing all the worst of the worst complications of diabetes, and once I realized that this is something that could have been prevented and reversed in most cases, I decided to pivot and move into the preventative wellness space. So I now coach patients, clients, and I specialize in type 2 diabetes reversal, but I'm board certified in lifestyle medicine, and I'm also a functional medicine practitioner as well. And I met Harry because he is also a surgical PA, and when I was looking to get back into the surgery realm, I found him and his practice with Elite Hands, which we'll learn a little bit more about, a surgical PA service that works to supply surgical support needs as from a PA standpoint to any surgeon in our community who needed the help. So he's been my boss in that position. And yeah, he kind of pivoted as well into a new area that I thought would be great. To let people learn a little bit more about today and how they could benefit from it. So I think you
And
have
what?
his bio to read though, right?
Well, and actually we're gonna let him share a little bit
Okay,
about
great.
that, but I do want to mention that Rita has a great website. I'll circle back to me. You can find me at kathybenner.com. You can find her at ritabrewer.com. And Rita, am I correct? You just did a master class here just recently.
I did a free webinar, yep, talking about
Yeah.
how to reverse your type 2 diabetes. Absolutely. And if anybody missed it but is interested, you could just send me an email on my website and I'd be happy to get you a replay to check that out.
Yeah, now here's what I want to say for those of you that are listening in. Sometimes you're saying, "Oh, I don't have type 2 diabetes. My doctor's never said that." But you could be pre-diabetic and not know it
Right.
as things kind of creep up on you. So again, there's a lot of factors that go into that. Rita can share, if you want to connect with her, she can let you know if you're even at risk with that, and if so, definitely listen to her webinar because it's very, very timely information. So, with that, I want to go over to Harry. And Harry, tell us a little bit about your journey. What did your early years look like, and how did you get to where you are today? I know that's a loaded question, but briefly, what's some of your early years like that even got you interested in doing what you're doing?
From the earliest days that I can remember, I was always interested in medicine in some aspect. Interestingly, I was in a lot of clubs and organizations, and one of the things I got into when I was younger was Boy Scouts. And going through kind of that whole path, as you go through Boy Scouts, you get what they're called merit badges, and they're basically little pieces of life that you learn about to see what you may want to go into, whether it's finance or citizenship, community, world, beekeeping, some odd things, but I was always fascinated by anything that we did with the first aid stuff, emergency preparedness, first aid, wilderness survival, and just learning all those different pieces kind of got me into it at an early age, just enjoying it, liking it. And I don't really know what it was, but it was just something that drew me to that area. And then we were able to start doing CPR classes, BLS classes when I was a teenager, and I kind of jumped on all that stuff to learn it all. Then had an incident when I was in high school with a neighbor that had a medical issue. Kind of feel hopeless to a degree, not really knowing what to do. And I was like, I just want to be able to help these people and figure out what to do during, crises and everything else to help people out. I got stuck onto surgery early in life also. There used to be a TV show back in the day when I was a teenager called The Operation. And it was just on TV, and they'd show different operations on TV. Of course, they'd blur out what they needed to and everything else. But I'd be sitting there watching the stuff on TV when I was, again, 15, 16, 17 year old, 17 years old in the living room, because there was only one TV in the house. And my family'd walk in and be like, "What is that? What are you looking at?" I'm like, "Oh, this is the coolest thing you can see. They're doing an operation on somebody for whatever it was at the time." And they're like, "That's disgusting." I'm like, "This is great."
What drew you to that? I know that just it's one of those things like, okay, what 15-year-old is watching surgeries on TV? So you okay, Rita too.
It's just in you.
It
I think it's just in you.
it's just
It is.
inherently in there. Okay.
If I was going to say it
Fascinating.
started earlier than that, I do remember the earliest classes in biology and pathology, and when we were in class and we're dissecting worms and dissecting grasshoppers, and we're doing a cat in high school, pigs, owl pellets, I think they were back in sixth grade. I was just fascinated, and I couldn't, yeah, I may have been into it a little more than I probably should have been, but at least I took the good route of going into medicine.
Well, and you know what? We've often said that I'm a passive income mentor, and one of the things that I do in the mentor of mentoring my students, my clients, is that I talk about what was their earliest passion. You know, what are some things that they really enjoyed or were passionate about, even as early as elementary school? And oftentimes, that's where the true passion is still hiding. You know, it's in there. I think it is kind of inherently in there. Tell us about your time at the Nova Southeastern University and your experience on receiving an award.
So I was accepted into Nova Southeastern University to their PA program there, which I say is kind of fortunate. I didn't go there undergrad. I was at a different university, but kind of got into all the extracurriculars in those places also. So going to a completely different school and not having being part of all those extracurriculars really threw me into my studies, and that's really one of the first times in my life I got to sit down and make sure I understood everything, was trying to get the best grades that I could. Again, knowing I enjoyed surgery, I'd always enjoyed that piece of it. So fortunately, I did well from the get-go. We started with a class of a little over 100 people in our program, and after the first couple of tests, they'd asked the students that were getting higher grades to sit on the review committees and things like that. So I was one of five students that were chosen for that, and just stayed involved with the teachers and all the and everything else at that point. And when we were able to get into our didactic year, our clinical year, going through rotations, I picked up every surgery rotation that I was able to do. I was finding cardiothoracic surgery. I was finding all the extra ones that nobody wanted to do, and at that point, I started talking to people for physician assistants. At the time, residencies were still kind of new. There wasn't many in the country, and this was almost 20 years ago.
Okay,
Some
then you did your residency at Duke then.
I did, so that's what brought me up to
Okay.
North Carolina. So I applied to three different places, and fortunately, I was accepted at Duke, and I wound up here. I was in their third PA surgical residency program. So moved up here, and I think knowing I was accepted to that and knowing the passion I had for surgery in school and making sure I was trying to always get the best grades on those exams, I think is really what got me that award when I was in school to stick out for that Williams or the Lippincott Williams and Wilkins Award that I received back in Nova as well.
All right, so now you're through school, and so now you're out there and you're working. Give us some examples of cases that really kind of inspired you to take your career in the direction that you did.
That's another loaded question. I growing up, I don't know what prompted me to always say I wanted to go in plastic surgery. I always wanted to be reconstructive and cosmetic and be in that field, but it wasn't really until I got a little bit older and I started doing stuff. I got into heart surgery. I thought usually if I thought it was the more difficult thing to do, it's usually what I wanted to jump into and learn more about and try to see what I can do well in. And I knew it was a difficult path for physician assistants, nurse practitioners, whomever, to go into cardiothoracic surgery. You get to do your own little surgery where you're essentially taking vein conduit or arterial conduit for bypasses and heart surgery. So I always wanted to start there. So of course, when I was in the residency and we were able to do our rotations and everything also, I geared myself towards the CT surgery side. All the electives, when people wound up leaving the program, they'd always ask me to come back over and go on the CT surgery side. So I got a lot more experience in the OR on the floor, how to take care of patients, making sure I understood everything in the ICUs. And jumping up from that aspect. So when I graduated, of course, I was looking for CT surgery jobs. And I applied to a fair amount on the East Coast. And the one that fit was the only one in North Carolina that I applied to. And I said, let's see how this goes. So started with that company and with the hospital system around here. And I was there for a little bit of time. But after being there for a while, there's always things that make you want to move or grow or continue to move on. And I had a good experience there, but there were certain things that said I want more. And I kind of had an opportunity to jump on with another group that was in town that was smaller, that was a PA run organization. And I said, you know what, if I don't have to work for a hospital system and I can kind of work with this group, let me see how this goes. So when I wound up jumping on with them, I wound up learning a lot more subspecialties at that time. I wound up taking call with urology. And at the time, the hospitals didn't have a whole lot of physician assistants, so we were covering six hospitals in the area.
Wow.
Three, four, five nights, you're on call, and you're getting 30 to 100 phone calls from patients at home, patients from the office, people on the floor. You have to keep going into the ER because they're calling you every time. So I picked up a lot in urology, picked up vascular surgery, started doing bariatric surgery at that time, and some general surgery. And then after being with them for a couple of years, there was another group that came to town where all they did was first assistant surgery. And I said, oh, let me see how this will go because now I can be back in surgery all the time. And when I got back in there, they kind of threw me in everything else. I picked up ortho, spine, GYN, gyne oncology. So I've done everything but brains, essentially, is what I tell everybody.
Wow. Now, Rita and Harry, you both know that you're speaking a whole different language than what I speak.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you guys could probably have a whole conversation with words that I don't know how to say.
Well, that's okay. But you know what? I want to point out the thing that I love about Harry. Like he said, he's worked in many different areas. And for those of people who don't know, the PA profession was started at Duke University in
Oh,
1966.
I didn't know that.
So our profession is 58 years old. But when we started, or when I started, I'm a lot older than Harry. But we didn't have PAs in all specialties. But now PAs are everywhere, from hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, anywhere you can think of, we have PAs and nurse practitioners now, which is awesome. But the majority of us are employed by some sort of a company or other office. But Harry started his own thing, and that was really impressed me. So he started his own PA surgical first assist company to provide surgical service because some doctors have their own PAs to help them in the operating room when they need it for a major a surgery. But some of them don't, or they would for whatever reason. So he started this company called Elite Hands, and to be able to fill in those gaps to provide those surgical first assist support to any surgeon in the community who needed it. And that was great for people like me who love variety. You know, I get bored just doing one specialty all the time. So it was great. And plus, we love operating. You know, that's just what we do. You know, so sometimes you have to do other things like taking call and making rounds and doing office hours. But the majority of the job was working in the operating room, which we love. And we get to do so many different varieties. So that, you know, always impressed me that Harry developed, you know, started his own company to employ PAs and provide a service that was really needed for the surgeons. So I would love, Harry, to just speak about, you know, what has your been, I mean, there's of course challenges. What have you enjoyed about being your own boss? Of course, having your own company has a lot of headaches as well. We all understand that, but whatever you want to share about the current practice, but then also what made you want to pivot into starting your own now wound care center and hyperbaric oxygen therapy center, which we want to get into talking about that a lot more as well. So you go ahead.
Certainly. So when I first started out, like as you were mentioning, a lot of people were working for hospital systems and everything else. And I realized very quickly that I felt like I was working for somebody and not with somebody. And it was always important to me to feel like I was working with somebody and doing something for somebody instead of really being told what to do. And I get that's part of our job is being told what to do. But again, I like the camaraderie and I always like to work with people. And I still joke around now, even when we started and Rita's like, he's my boss. I always correct people. I'm like, no, you work with me. I'm not the person where I'm always, I'm over you this time. I try to keep myself equal with everybody and I work with people and I enjoy that part. So when I first started getting into starting the practice, you know, there was a lot of bumps and headaches and things like that. And I'll try to keep that part short, but I tried to get a network with the insurance companies and they basically all looked at me and said, you're a PA. We're not giving you a contract. You don't deserve one. Just why don't you join a hospital? Go join a doctor. And I really had to figure out how to maneuver my way around that space. And it took me 8 years to actually get into network with almost all the insurance companies. It took me about 5 to get in with the first one, which is Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina. At the time, they owned 82.6% of the private payers, so they controlled everything. Once I got in with them, it opened up some more doors to the other insurance payers around the state. But it was difficult to get those contracts. I wound up having to deal with things that probably some PAs and other people would have never had to deal with. Quickly, I got thrown out of a hospital one day. I walked in and they said, you need to leave. And I said, what did I do? They were come to find out the insurance companies were kind of running things from the back end. And the insurance, the Blue Cross Blue Shield was about to redo one of the hospital's insurance contracts. And they said, we don't like this guy. You need to throw him out. Is what it boiled down to. So I walked in and they said, you need to leave the hospital. I said, how can you do that from an insurance company? They're like, because they're the ones that pay us. If you need to, you know, you do what you have to do, but you need to leave. And I was, so here I am calling up the North Carolina Medical Society, calling up NCAPA, APA. And I'm like, hey, I'm being thrown out of a hospital because an insurance company, I'm being blackballed here. I don't know why this is happening. And I kind of got the pat on the back saying, we appreciate what you're doing for the profession, but we have bigger fish we're frying. So keep on giving the good fight. And so I wound up having to deal with a lot of it on my own to kind of get through.
How did you overcome that? That just seems, again, we hear this all the time where the insurance companies, you know, kind of steer the ship and it no longer is really about patient care. It's more about getting paid.
Yes.
So how did you overcome that?
I'll always say there's always a little bit of luck with anything. I was lucky enough to come across some really great surgeons at that time. And some of them really had my back in terms of before they went to the hospitals, they went to these surgeons and they basically said, you need to stop working with him. And they were like, but he does things that nobody else is doing for us. He's covering the call, rounding, everything else. They're like, we can't give this up. I had a couple of them basically stick out their necks for me with the insurance company. And as hard as they were ridden, they wound up saying stuff to the hospital, and it really kind of forced their arm to sit down with me and take me seriously to kind of listen to me 5 years into having a practice to enable us to have an actual conversation and get into the contract. It took a while, but I'm fortunate for some of the docs that I work with.
So then once you broke through with the first contract, then once you were in, it was a little easier from there, I take it.
It did. It still took a little bit of time with the insurance companies, but I asked them when they gave me the information, because when they ran all these numbers behind me, when I sat down with them, I said, well, we're doing this, we're saving you money here, this is why you should be giving us contracts. They said, so let me get this straight, because you're doing what you're doing, you're saving us money. And I said, absolutely. They said, well, prove it. I said, I can't. I said, I'm a PA, I'm busy, I'm working all day. And half jokingly, I'm like, you're the insurance company, you have all these numbers, why don't you run it? And they looked at me and said, okay. They called me back 2 months later to sit down in this meeting, and they ran the numbers. And I was, I didn't think it was going to go too well at first. They were showing me, here's what everybody else charges, here's what you're charging, here's what the hospital. But then at the end of the 20-minute conversation, where they said we're costing this amount and everything else, they said, but here's people getting readmitted to the hospital. The people you're operating on are coming back down here. We're so they're basically like, you're corroding the numbers is what they called it. They said, we need to pull you a network to see what it would be like to have everything in a that you're getting paid and making sure that we're still making our savings also. So when we finished that and they ran all the numbers and everything else, I asked them for a copy of that from their program and said, do you mind if I show this to other people? So when I went to the other insurance companies, I said, hey, Blue Cross Blue Shield ran these numbers and here they are to Cigna, UnitedHealthcare, Humana, and everybody else. And they kind of sat down and took me a little bit more seriously at that point.
Now, for those that are listening that don't know, when a patient comes out of any type of a medical facility, if there is a readmission, the facility gets some black marks. And those of you that are listening, if you don't understand that, that's kind of what he's talking about. His patients were not getting readmitted because he was doing a better job getting them through that recovery rehabilitation type stage and getting them home, and they weren't having to be readmitted, which was what was saving the insurance companies tons of money. And so, yeah, kudos to you.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And I
Yeah.
really give it up to him for fighting this fight for so many years, because you've had Elite Hands for how many years now, Harry?
I think I opened the doors in around 2010.
Wow. Yeah. So
Okay.
now let's pivot to where just was it just last year you opened up a new clinic, right?
Yes.
So tell us all about that and what made you start that.
So after the 8, 9 years of being a network with the insurance companies, I felt like I wanted to grow the company, and I tried to figure out which areas I could. I did feel the surgery side may have been shrinking a little bit, because now there's a lot more PAs coming out. They started working for the hospitals, and I was trying to get contracts with them also, but they just wanted to hire their own PAs, and I got that. So I sat there and said, I've got all these contracts. The contracts are really good. What am I going to do with this? And then I started looking around and saying, I don't want to do family medicine. I don't want to do urgent care. And those are on every corner right now. And there are PAs and NPs opening those up. So I said, what else exists that's not around? And I just wound up realizing, even in surgery itself, when we wound up having wounds that were not controlled, we're calling very specific people. And it was very tough to get people into the wound care department. And I was like, I could do wounds. I'm kind of dealing with it on the floor. I'm dealing with the surgery. It's kind of my own surgery. And kind of the other part of that was, well, I guess I don't have to take call for emergent wounds. I can have kids now. And I'm like, huh, maybe I can get out at a reasonable hour and all the other fun stuff. So I started looking into it. And when I looked around the state, there was one freestanding wound care and one freestanding hyperbaric clinic that I knew about in the state when I looked about 3 years ago. There was none, except for, like I said.
Wow. And talk about a need.
Yes. So I said, well, the other ones that existed, well, I'm saying freestanding for, again, for people that don't know the difference. There are wound care clinics, but a lot of them are part of the hospital system. So it's kind of like the way the ER used to work. And I don't think people completely understand. There's a reason that there's urgent cares on every corner right now. So it used to be, before the urgent cares existed, all you had was the emergency room. So you'd go to the emergency room, and what would happen? You'd get two bills from them. You'd get the bill from the physician or PA. And then which is the professional side, and then you get the facility fee. The facility fee's somewhere in the range of 10 times the amount. So just throw numbers out there. If your bill for the professional side was $100 to see the doctor or the PA, your bill for showing up at the hospital was $1,000, just because they're the hospital and that's what they're able to charge. So urgent cares got very popular at that time, because what they did, they went around and said, you know what? We don't need $1,100. We could probably make this work. And again, just making up numbers, maybe they'll give us $500 as a professional fee. You know what? The insurance companies are saving $600 now because they're not paying all this out. So over time, there was a shift. And what happened was, the insurance companies picked that up and they figured out how to force that shift. And what they did was change your copays and deductibles. So now you see on all your cards, the deductibles are a lot higher to go to an ER. It's going to cost you $200 to $500 as opposed to going to the urgent care, which is $20 or $40. So it took years to build that up and cause that shift, but they took everything away from the hospital, saying there is no need for anybody to go to the hospital to spend that kind of money. How are we going to cut costs? So I basically looked at what I was doing as the same type of shift, and I said, this doesn't exist in the wound care space or hyperbarics. So currently, they're all part of the hospital system. And again, some of these are outpatient surgeries, is what they're calling these, because we're debriding and taking things off of wounds. So these bills are not $1,100. Some of them are $22,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a pop. And that's once a week that these patients are going in for wound care. So wound care is always called a billion-dollar business, but it's all around healthcare. It's not inside healthcare. The professionals are not the ones making that, but the people that are coming, the emergency rooms, the facilities, the people coming up with the equipment are the ones that are making all that money. So I said, how do we bring that cost down and help patients? And that's why I said I created a freestanding clinic. I'm not part of a hospital system. So I've had patients that have been able to come over to us in the past year that their copay is going to a hospital or 150. They're not paying anything coming to me because I'm not a facility and they don't have those facility copays. And then on the flip side, it was kind of the same thing with hyperbarics. When they go in, a lot of the
Now
treatments.
explain hyperbarics to our audience because I know they're not going to know what that is.
So hyperbarics is twofold. It's an increase in oxygen and an increase in pressure. Most people know hyperbarics as something where divers get when they get those nitrogen bubbles, or common people know as the bends when they're diving down too long, they're coming up. So when people get the bends, it's the chamber that they're put in to kind of get them back to normal and get oxygen in their system. So as an everyday thing, when we breathe air, and most people were sitting at 1 atmosphere pressure, and when we breathe normal air, you're pulling 21% oxygen out of the air itself. That's normal for people. Inside a hyperbaric chamber, and I'll be specific a little bit on some of this, the monoplace chambers, like medical grade chambers that we have, we go up to 100% oxygen, and we can go up to 3 atmospheres of pressure. As you have 100% oxygen and you're increasing pressures above 1.5 atmospheres of pressure, you start what we call solubilizing oxygen in your tissue plasma. So right now you take a breath, oxygen gets pulled into your lungs, goes in your red blood cell. That red blood cell runs around your arteries and drops it off where it's supposed to go. And then, the red blood cell kind of comes around, and hopefully you're getting oxygen wherever it's needed. Inside those hyperbaric chambers, when you're doing the breathing, now you're solubilized oxygen into all your tissue plasma, which is all the water in your body. So you've bypassed that breathing mechanism. There was a study done back in the 1960s that showed life without blood. They actually exsanguinated an animal and kept it in a hyperbaric chamber for 6 hours to show you don't need blood to transport oxygen around because the hyperbaric chambers are doing that for you. So after keeping that animal alive for 6 hours, they re-exsanguinate and showed that the animal was still living afterwards. And the four basic things I tell people that hyperbarics does when you're inside those chambers, number one, when you're getting that squeeze on the pressure from the atmosphere, it gets rid of some edema. So if you cut yourself or hurt yourself or concussions, anything like that, the first thing that happens is you get inflammation to that area. You get edema, you get swelling. That's what signals your body to say, hey, something happened. Let's send things to that area. But now you've kind of diluted everything in that area because you've got all that swelling there. So the chamber itself is squeezing some of that out to get rid of some of that. When you get oxygen to that area itself, it now sets off that wound care cycle for people. So it increases what we call stem cell production. So stem cells are immature cells in your body that go wherever they're supposed to and become what they're supposed to. The liver becomes a liver cell, goes to the brain, becomes a brain cell. Number two, it increases neutrophil production. Neutrophils are things that are immature white blood cells. So those are the things in your body that go and fight off infection and things like that. So if there's any sort of infection in your body, it's helping fight off that. And the third big thing it does is it helps create what we call angioneogenesis, which is we're increasing blood vessels inside your body when you're inside those chambers. So if you have an area that's been damaged, whether it's from a wound or from a bump or a scrape or concussions and things like that, now we're building a new pathway of arteries to that area. So when you're outside the chamber and you're breathing, now you're hopefully getting oxygen to that area more readily.
Wow. That's huge. I mean, that simply is huge. And how many patients have you helped since you started doing this standalone?
We've only been open since about November of 22, so a little over about a year and a half. And it's we've I don't know if I have an exact number, but we're the fortunate place that we've been. Hospital systems are only able to do what they call on-label hyperbarics. So for on-label hyperbarics, it has to be something that's approved by insurance, and there's only 15 approved indications by insurance. That'd be
Okay.
very specific wounds, people with the bends, carbon monoxide poisoning, people who need chambers, and things like that. And those are listed. Insurance companies say, we'll pay for this. And then there's the off-label side. And that's the part where a lot of people are trying to use the chamber, but you can't walk into a hospital and say, hey, I want to use this for off-label people with concussions. There's a lot of athletes that are starting to use it for athletic recovery, post-concussive recovery. I've actually dove my own son in it. I dove another colleague of mine. His son was playing hockey a couple of weeks ago, got his first bad concussion at 14 years old, dove him for 5 days. These conversations we're having with other people. After 5 days, he was feeling much better, was able to go back to school, and he was participating back in his sports again because he was back at baseline from the concussion. So that's the off-label side. So we're getting stuff from both sides. I don't have somebody there every month, but there are months where I have three or four patients diving. We have two chambers currently, and as we start getting busier, we plan on putting more chambers, and we built out for a lot more. So hopefully we're able to help more a lot more of the community. But I realize it takes time to build the practice and get people in there also.
Well, and the folks have to come to you because it's not a situation where you can go to them. Am I correct?
Correct. And
Yeah.
that's part a lot of the biggest issue that we have is education to people. As I've mentioned before, we have a medical grade chamber. People don't realize there are different type of hyperbaric chambers out there. So a lot of people will see the soft sided chambers and they're like, oh, but I have a chiropractor. I have somebody else that says they're giving me hyperbarics. And as I mentioned before, when you're breathing 21% oxygen out of the air, and we're giving you 100, at that point, if I remember my numbers correctly, your arterial oxygen at room air is about 157 millimeters of mercury. Inside a medical grade chamber, you're getting your oxygen up to 1,857. So you're more than doing 10 times the amount of what you can get oxygen wise in normal air. The soft sided chambers, they don't have oxygen at 100%. They're pumping in oxygen off a tank, so you're pulling in 24% oxygen. Again, you're only breathing 21. So you're going from 157 in your arteries to maybe 250. But there's a lot of people using those soft-sided chambers currently because they're less expensive. There's people out there, and they're a little bit more readily accessible to people. And I have people that come to me, and they, of course, want to know the difference and everything else. And I tell people, if you have one of those chambers that are helping you, when you get into another chamber, it's likely going to help you more. But I do think some of those chambers are not going to help people. And I tell people, even with the medical grade chambers, it's not 100%. I'm very clear with all the patients that come in and tell them, I'm not looking to sell you snake oil. I believe in the medicine. I believe in what it does because I've seen it work, and I've seen it work on people. And we have the numbers and the protocols out there. What I like about what we do, we are able to customize what patients need. We happen to know that the brain works better at lower atmospheric pressures. We know that wounds work at higher atmospheric pressures. We can do specific things because they're medical grade, whether we're trying to get people out of the bends or whatever else. You can't do those in soft chambers. And in multi-chambers, which is the other kind that exists, they are medical grade chambers, but you have a number of people in there. They could be anywhere between 2 and 12 people in a chamber. Everybody gets treated at the same depth, the same amount of time, and not everybody may not need that same depth or chamber. It works for a lot of people, don't get me wrong, but I tell people that's one of the reasons we got the single chambers, so we can customize for what patients need, not necessarily just get anything just because it's there to exist.
So if it's not covered by insurance and somebody, has a medical situation where this would help them, what kind of a cost are they looking at?
So for us, different than the rest of the country, of course. I try to keep my numbers lower in terms of where things are. To give you an idea of where things cost, New York, California, where they've been around for a while and they're out, some of these are between $400 and $600 per treatment. So, and if you're saying you need 40 treatments and you're talking 400 times 40 treatments, you're talking a very large amount. I've purposefully kept our numbers a lot less. So there's two different amount of time that you may need to be in there, maybe 60 minutes or 90 minutes. And again, that depends on what the issue is and what's going on and what we're trying to treat. So for a 60 minute, our general price is 250, and for a 30 minute or 90 minutes under pure oxygen is 300 per treatment. We'd wound up giving price breaks when you have to get 10, 20, 30, or 40. And I usually wind up talking to patients also and say, look, you might be the person that needs 40, but why don't we start with the one down here? That way, we can give us some feedback. Tell us how you're feeling. Let's see how you're doing. I don't want to tell you to pay for 40 treatments off the bat if it's not something that's going to help you. And fortunately, it's helped a lot of patients, and I've had a lot of people that keep coming back. I've had one or two also, in all honesty, that they said it didn't do anything for them after 20 treatments. And I get it. And I tell people the numbers are good, the percentages are high, but it's not 100%. So I can't guarantee anything at that rate. We've been doing more deals recently, also at 25% off for the past couple of months, because we realize it's getting a little bit more people in, because we have people looking at soft-sided chambers and things around here. And I'm trying to get people to understand the difference when they come into something like us for somewhere else.
So when you have, because you have a wound care center and the hyperbarics as well, so are the majority of your patients from the wound care center that like diabetics with non-healing ulcers that you think could benefit from the chamber? Or if not, what other medical conditions are you seeing that using it for, like that is covered with insurance?
So there's a very specific reason we have them as two different companies, and a lot of that deals with insurance and things like that. And it was for us in order to figure out how to keep the costs down for patients. Like I said, you go to a hospital, they're going to say, we're not going to do these off-label uses. We can, but it's going to cost you $100,000, and you have to pay us up front. And people aren't spending that kind of money. So that's where we said, how do we keep this down? So when people come to us, we'll have everybody seen on the Elite Hand side. We call them sister companies, essentially. And that's because oxygen itself is still a medication. It has to be prescribed. So you're having a physician assistant see you on that side. And we're the ones seeing you over on the Elite Hand side, on the wound care side, saying, all right, you have these issues. We realize these are the protocols that are good for this. We'll prescribe this for you at this atmospheric pressure. You may or may need air brakes. And we recommend you get this amount of treatments that'll probably help for you. So on the wound care side, when we have people in there, it works a little bit different because we can see it. We know exactly what needs to be documented based on the insurance companies and the local coverage determinations for these things. So with wound care specifically, we happen to know it has to be a specific Wagner grade, which is a very specific diabetic grade of a wound. You have to show specific things. You have to say you've tried all these things. All the documentation needs to be there. So there's a little bit more buildup to get you in from the wound care side. We'll have people coming with that have had breast cancer, prostate cancer, that wind up getting radiation, and they'll get radiation necrosis for different things. So we'll have people with radiation cystitis, people that are urinating blood just from the destruction of vessels in that area. The hyperbarics will help fix radiation cystitis to help repair some of that. So we're building new blood vessels and things like that from people that have had their vessels destroyed. Breast cancer patients that have had radiation on the breasts and have had surgery, some of them wind up with edema, pain, what we call telangiectasias, which are increase in blood vessels to the area, and they will get more. I forgot the term I'm looking for, but they'll be harder after a time, and they can get painful for women. Hyperbarics for radiation cystitis of that will help. Even doing the 30 to 40 treatments, some people think, I just need to go and do another reconstruction to get this fixed. That may not be the answer. It may fix you to go to hyperbarics and actually have everything calm down and get more oxygen to the area and not have it as tight. And then if you do need a reconstruction afterwards, a lot of times they take better afterwards. And it's for patients to know. And I've had these conversations with some people also. It's a time commitment. When you're coming in and you have to be in those chambers for about 2 to 2.5 hours, that's daily for 40 treatments. So some of them are like, oh, I'm living life and going out. And I'm like, all right, that's great. I get it. If you change your mind, come on back.
So is it take that long for everybody that and that two you said 2 hours or?
So for the patients that are going to like radiation and osteomyelitis and those type of things, those are higher pressures. Those are 90-minute treatments, and we're sitting usually around a 2.4, 2.5 atmospheric pressure. And I do that based on all the protocols and everything that I've read in the books, and see where most of the studies have done and why I like them there. But when you're over 2.0 atmospheres of pressure and you're at 100% oxygen, you can get too much oxygen. Since that's why I said oxygen is prescribed, you can have oxygen toxicity. So if you are in a chamber for more than 30 minutes at 100% at higher pressures, you have a chance of going into seizures and get it from that oxygen toxicity. It's not something that happens very often, but we know it's something that can occur. So what happens every 30 minutes, we wind up giving a patient an air brake. So they're breathing normal air on a mask while they're inside the chamber to bring their oxygen levels back down to normal. And then we give them for another 30 minutes. So over the 90 minutes, you're in there. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes to dive to the pressure. So we go in, you put them at the chamber. We try to get them to that 1 atmosphere, up to 2.4 atmospheres of pressure, depending on the patient, how they're able to pop their ears and how they're maintaining everything. They'll wind up being able to, they'll be in there for 15 minutes or 20 minutes on that side. We start the clock when we're at the pressure we're supposed to be at, 30 minutes, and then a 5 minute air break, 30 minutes, another 5 minute air break. And then we start, and then the last 30 minutes, we'll start bringing them back down to atmospheric pressure, which may take another 15 to 20 minutes. So if you're talking about the 20 minutes on each side with 90 minutes and 2 5-minute air breaks, you could be 2.5 hours. If patients are able to tolerate the dive a little bit quicker, we can shorten those dives to, maybe 2 hours if it's not taking 20 to 25 minutes to dive in or dive out of those pressures. And for the people that are in 60 minutes, usually at lesser pressures, they're using there for a little bit of time also. So we tell people it's going to be about 80 minutes on the lowest end, but it may get up as high as 130, 140 minutes before you're out of there, which is a little over 2 hours.
Well, I do have a question. Is there some side effects to being in the chamber that are good? You know how sometimes, like, folks that get sometimes the Ozempic, one of the great side effects is it helps them lose some weight. Is there some good side effects? Is it useful for like anti-aging or
So it's an interesting question, and I do like to answer this. I've had a bunch of patients that have asked this. I tell some people, jokingly, some of the side effects that I've gotten when we first started diving patients here, some people say they've slept the best they ever had. They can't go to sleep, they can't sleep through the night, they're having pain, and they get out, some people, patients with migraines, and they get out and they're like, I don't know what it is, but after sleeping in this chamber, I didn't have my migraine tonight. That's the best I've slept in 10 years. It's not everybody, but it wound up being a pretty big number for some of these patients. The anti-aging thing, the book answer and what people are going to tell you are two different things also. Hyperbaric chambers is not used for anti-aging. That being said, looking at the studies, what they do realize, it decreases when you have cell division. I don't know if I'm taking everybody back to a physiology class. You have the cell that divides into two cells. Every time that cell divides, you have these, the ends of those get shorter and shorter, and those are called your telomeres. So as your telomeres get shorter, that's basically the division of life. When you get down to the point you can't divide them anymore, that's end of life, essentially, old age. You just don't live anymore because you can't divide any more cells. Hyperbarics has showed those telomeres to stay about the same or get a little bit longer over time. So there is no anti-aging per se. When you read all the books, it doesn't exist. But on some patients, they're showing that it's increasing the telomere length. So
Right. And they
could
do
some people
say
wonder?
that prolonging the telomere, protecting the telomeres increases longevity, though, right?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. So what about also, for biohackers like me, people who just want to optimize their health, they may not have any, significant medical issues or the wounds or anything like that, but in the biohacking space, like what other benefits can people see? Is it like reduced pain, inflammation, joint pain? What other like autoimmune issues? Is there any research about that? Other benefits?
There's research in a lot of different areas, which I don't think people realize, but basically almost everything that you mentioned, whether it's an autoimmune disease or joint or this or that. I have patients that are coming in for rheumatoid arthritis in their fingers because it hurts so bad and they couldn't get anything else that was helping. She's now coming in maybe once every 2 to 3 weeks. And she's, after 3 years of being in pain, after the amount of dives that she's did, she's just doing to maintain it now. She doesn't have any pain anymore. She says it's working great. I've had other patients that come in with just post-surgical, again, getting rid of edema. Because when you have arthritis, osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, as I said, one of the big things is you're squeezing a lot of that stuff out. Is it a permanent fix? No, and I tell people that. We can't permanently fix certain things. But knowing that we're decreasing the amount of edema and inflammation and things like that, and getting some healing back to that area, it does help reduce some of the issues that people are having. IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, they're finding that it's helping with a lot of the inflammation that they're getting, again, because you're squeezing a lot of the edema out, getting reparative things, getting neutrophils to those areas to help replace them. And there's a lot of micro stuff that happens also. And I know I didn't delve into all of those little pieces, but that's why it helps in a lot of different areas, again, because you're kind of hitting everything in the body at the same time.
And the RA patient you were talking about, is that in conjunction with the RA meds or instead of?
Instead of this patient, I think she's
Wow.
a psychiatrist or psychologist, but very smart lady also. And we had gotten into some conversations, and she was sending me some information on revitalization of cartilage. And I was like, I don't know of anything that exists for that yet. And we had this entire conversation that I'm having with you guys now. And I said, look, I don't think hyperbarics is going to revitalize your cartilage, but I think if it's in decreasing the amount of pain that you're having in your thumbs and you're able to move your hands better, then we continue to do it. And that's kind of, we've been lucky with her, and it has. So she, again, every couple of weeks, she'll just call us and say, I think it's time for another dive. I just want to come in. And kind of along those lines, we have another patient that has a chronic regional pain syndrome. Who she's getting platelet-rich plasma, PRP injections, and things like that, which is keeping it down. But she's dove a couple of times with us also. And she's telling us that the amount of pain that she's in after she left, fortunately, and I don't expect one treatment to help people. But fortunately with her, even after the one treatment she has, she said she felt so much better. She's come back occasionally also. She's not an everyday patient, but she's coming back occasionally just to, when she gets a flare up, she wants it to bring it back down so she's feeling better from those things.
That's great.
This is so intriguing. This is information that in an area that I have never researched before. So I did a little research knowing you were coming on, and it's just so exciting to see everything that's going on in the medical field and where things are heading. So I'm so happy to talk with you. I want to ask anyone in the audience. We still have Sherry and Deepak in the audience. Christy had to jump off. She had another call. Do you guys have any questions while we still have Harry on the call for Harry or for Rita or myself? Any questions at all? We'd be happy to entertain those. Now, while we're waiting to see if they have some questions, Harry, I want to ask you, outside of all of your professional endeavors, how do you balance the home with running the business, with you want to travel. How do you balance all
I'm still trying to figure some of that
that?
out. I do try to make time for it, and I do realize there are times I have to wind up putting more effort into certain spaces than others. Rita knows, but I didn't share at the beginning. I have 13-year-old triplets,
Oh,
so
my goodness.
they keep me fairly busy also, and running around with them, trying to make sure they're keeping up with their schoolwork, and trying to run around to all of their extracurricular or curriculars after school and everything also, and trying to keep up with the business side. I'm trying to make sure I throw vacation in there occasionally. Sometimes it depends on the year. It's not as much as I'd like, but I'm planning on getting
I
more of
have
it at some point.
to ask, boys, girls, or a combination?
Combination. So I actually had two eggs, one split. So I've got identical twin boys and a girl that's fraternal to them.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
I do tell people I had hair 13 years ago. After pulling it out in patches, I finally said I just need to take it off because it was pulling it out way too much.
I love that. So I know that age group is so crazy busy. I remember those days, and I only had one, and I had my own business and had a 13-year-old. And yeah, it's kind of tough to juggle all of that. Now, you do like traveling though. What is your favorite spot to travel? And when you do travel that far away from your business, do you have a team now that can handle everything while you're gone?
Not yet, not on this side. I had gotten
Okay.
there on the other side, which is why I think I was able to do more towards the end of the surgery side when we were busy over there. Now that I've rebuilt these other pieces, I haven't gotten back to that point, and that's what I'm looking for, which is why I think the last year has kind of cut down a little bit.
Okay.
I need to build the right team that I can trust that I can leave, because I'm still doing seeing a lot of the patients and everything on my own on that side.
I get it.
But
And I'm sure they appreciate you. I'm sure they do. Yes. It's always hard to hand off those patients
it
that
is.
really depend on you.
And I will say, and I'm gonna make an assumption that Rita's clients are probably like the clients that I currently have on the wound care side. She's been in surgery, she's been in other places. You get patients that come in that are just, some of them are, to be honest, they're nasty. They everything is, you know, deserved. They need everything. They're just not friendly people. The wound care space, they're some of the most friendliest people I've come with. They're so thankful that somebody's there to help take care of them and do these things. They are so grateful. They're so friendly. They're so nice to be around. And yeah, like you said, some of them don't want to see anybody else but the person that's taking care of them because they start enjoying seeing them week in and week out.
Well, and you become part of their solution.
Yes.
So they don't want anybody else. Put in the chat for us and share with our listeners, Harry, how folks can connect with you. What is the best way if do you have a website? What is the best way that they can connect with you?
I do. So we have a couple of different websites. The first one I tell people to usually go to is hyperbaricnc for Hyperbaric North Carolina .com. So hyperbaricnc.com is our main website on the hyperbaric side. And we do have a lot of information, even some of the stuff that I mentioned here, we kind of have in some pictograph form so people can see what we're talking about with the oxygen and how it gets to in the plasma, answer some questions on label versus off label, and kind of an info button if you need to reach out to us and you want to talk to us. And on the other side, it's woundcarenc.com for woundcarenorthcarolina.com. So we have both of those websites. Our general phone number, if you want me to put it out there, 919-881-8295. And I usually tell people hit extension 2 or extension 3, and that's either to the wound care or the hyperbaric side also.
All right. And I'm making a note of these as well so that I can put them in the actual replay. So when folks sign in to the kathybinder.com and look for the replay, all of your contact information will be there as well. And
Thank
I'll put Rita's there, but I'll put all of your information there as well. So thank you so much for being on with us. This has been very interesting. I really appreciate you taking your time. I'm glad that we could help promote what you do. It was a big educational piece for me because this was information that I had never come in contact with before. I ran a healthcare agency for about 4 years, just doing personal care on seniors, and so we did have a big problem with wound care. With some of those the seniors in some nursing homes and that sort of thing. So I can really appreciate what you're doing. It's so valuable. I'm so happy to have talked with you. Rita, thank you so much for bringing Harry to us.
My
And
pleasure.
so folks that are listening, I know we still have a couple in the audience, but folks that are listening to the replay later, just know that you can go to kathybinder.com and go over to the health and wellness, and it is free. My platform is on Teachable, so you will probably be asked to open a Teachable account, which is just your email and a password if you want to put one in there, but it's free. And you can listen to all of our replays. They're all free. And all of the contact information for Harry and Rita will be there. But the Academy does have a membership site. It's $25 a month, and you get the entire Academy for that. And we do tribe trips, so maybe we'll go see Harry. Harry and Rita, we'll go to the Carolinas. Yeah.
That
That
would be fun.
sounds good to me. So anyway, join us. We're here every Monday at noon. We have a different topic every Monday. And then we're also back on the third Monday of every month at 4 with Rita, and Rita and I are talking about all things health and wellness. So thank you so much for being with us, and we will see everyone next time. Any last words from Rita or Harry?
I just want to say thank you for inviting me to be on here as well. It was eye-opening. This is the first podcast I've gotten on, so I've
Yay.
enjoyed
Oh,
it.
interesting. Interesting. Rita, do I tell him as a free gift, we actually include you in our speakers cabinet. And so you might get some invitations because I have now several different podcasters visit my speakers cabinet when they're in need of a guest. So you might get invited to be on some more. So I appreciate
Thank
that. Yep, I love it. I'm gonna write down
you.
your phone number here real quick.
Yep, I put them all in the chat box there. Thank you so much for
All
being
right.
on, Harry.
Perfect.
Thank you, Rita. I appreciate it.
My
All
pleasure.
right.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Kathy, as
everybody.
always.
Yes, I love it. Thank you so much. And we'll see everybody next month.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.